Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
Hello and welcome to today's edition of Africa Link. This Monday, the 25th of June, 2018. I'm Crispin Mwakideo.
And I'm Zipora Nyambura. You're also listening to us live on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Be sure to leave us your comments and share this audio.
Coming up, Zimbabwe's government vows to go ahead with elections despite Saturday's bomb blast at a political rally.
That act of terrorism which happened in Bulawayo is nothing. It does not deter anyone. But the police will hand down the criminal or those criminals.
Nigeria boosts security in the central region after deadly violence between herders and farmers left 86 people dead. So, what is the reason behind these killings?
There's an ethnic issue, there's a religious issue, and then there's a political issue about positions on the local level, who is getting a bit of the share of the federal money.
Also in the program, Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan is re-elected, this time with more powers.
These are some of the stories that we have lined up for you. But first, here's a chance to listen to what has been happening around the world.
I'm Shay Mandiki with DW News. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has been re-elected for another 5 years following Sunday's presidential and parliamentary elections. With the win, Erdogan will have new executive powers. His ruling AK party and its nationalist allies also secured a majority in parliament. International election monitors criticized the so-called uneven field during the vote, saying they found unique undue advantages for Erdogan. German lawmakers have warned of an emergency situation for a rescue ship stranded in the Mediterranean Sea after Italy closed its ports to the ship. The boat, operated by German NGO Mission Lifeline, has been waiting off the Italian coast with over 200 migrants since last week. Hermina Paschmann, a Lifeline crew member, said human rights are being violated.
The ignorance of the European Union toward the situation here in the Mediterranean has become intolerable for me. Here, fundamental human rights are being crushed and we are witnessing it. We, the crew of Mission Lifeline, do everything to take care of our 234 passengers on board.
So gut es uns möglich ist zu versorgen.
According to the International Organization for Migration, Algeria has abandoned more than 13,000 African migrants in the Sahara Desert over the past 14 months. IOM official Ahoussen Adoual called mass deportations a catastrophe.
They come by the thousands. This time, the expulsions that I'm seeing, I've never seen anything like it. There are even babies. They even expel pregnant women, women who give birth 1 or 2 weeks later.
Algeria has dismissed the allegations. This news comes to you from DW, Germany's international broadcaster. Nigeria sent reinforcements to the central state of Plateau after violence between Muslim herders and Christian farmers ended with at least 86 people dead. A curfew had also been killed, and President Muhammadu Buhari condemned the attacks, saying no efforts would be spared to find the attackers. The long-running conflict has its roots in a battle for land and water, but over the years has taken on an ethnic, political, and religious dimension. South Sudan President Salva Kiir has met again with his rival Riek Machar in neighboring Sudan, where the two warring leaders held talks on ending the country's 5-year bloody civil war. Both leaders hoped for a breakthrough in peace talks, but indicated that concessions have so far not been made. In Zimbabwe, the state media said two people died from their injuries after an explosion over the weekend nearly hit President Emmerson Mnangagwa at a pre-election rally. The ruling ZANU-PF party said one of the victims was a member of the presidential guard. At least 49 people were injured. There has been no claim of responsibility. And now in World Cup football news, Uruguay beat Russia with a score of 3-0. And Saudi Arabia beat Egypt 2-1 with a thrilling last-minute goal. Later tonight, Iran plays Portugal and Spain takes on Morocco. For more news and information, visit our website at dw.com. I'm Shay Meineke.
You're listening to DW's Africa Link program. I'm Crispin Mwakideo.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura. As usual, we're also live on our Facebook page. So where are you listening from? And do you have a feedback on the stories we are covering? Do send us a comment. And we start off in Zimbabwe, which has ruled out delaying next month's elections after a bomb blast at a ruling party rally in which President Emmerson Mnangagwa narrowly escaped unharmed. Two people have today been confirmed dead from that incident, which left 49 others seriously injured.
Mnangagwa, who took power after the coup against longtime leader Robert Mugabe, said he was the target of the attack, which the state media is describing as an assassination attempt. From Harare, Privilege Mushaniri reports.
Scenes from the weekend's blast showed a device exploding and plumes of smoke billowing around Mnangagwa as he descended from the podium at the White City Stadium in Bulawayo. Vice President Constantino Chiwenga, who was among those injured in the attack, says it will not in any way deter the upcoming elections.
That act of terrorism which happened in Bulawayo is nothing. It does not deter anyone, but the police will hand down the criminal or those criminals.
However, according to Eldred Masunungure, a professor at the University of Zimbabwe, the attack was an isolated event which he believes was orchestrated by the governing party itself.
It is frightening, but I don't think the opposition engineered it. I don't think they executed it. I would rather think that it is an intra-regime affair, a continuation of the struggles within ZANU-PF. It's a continuation of the factionalism that bedeviled the party in the past 3-4 years.
Tawanda Chimini, director of the Election Resource Center, thinks it's time the government dealt with unanswered questions about last year's coup, which forced the resignation of Zimbabwe's longtime ruler, Robert Mugabe.
It's very disturbing, very worrying. I think it points to the fragility, I would suppose, of the peace that we have seen. Peace must not just be the absence of violence, but it must also include the absence of the threat of the same. So while we have not seen actual violence, I would suppose the threat of violence has been a constant factor leading into this election.
Meanwhile, the European Union has deployed 44 long-term election observers to oversee the forthcoming elections. The team was sent across 10 provinces countrywide, marking the first time in 16 years that Zimbabwe opens up its doors to international observers. Opposition politicians like Jameson Timba have welcomed the move, which they say could limit election irregularities witnessed in the past.
We are actually quite pleased that we do have international observers on a long-term basis. It has been in our issue with ZANU-PF to say, why are you not allowing observers to come from anywhere in the world? Because they've got nothing to hide. But because they had something to hide, they were denying observers to come here.
Zimbabwe had closed off scrutiny by the international community following frost relations with the former president Robert Mugabe, who stepped down in November 2017.
Privilege Mushaniri reporting from Zimbabwe.
And now let's head to Turkey, where President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has been re-elected for another five-year term after he secured first-round victory in the presidential elections.
His re-election ushers in a new system of government, which grants the president sweeping new powers following a referendum held last year. I talked to our correspondent there, Julia Hahn, who starts by telling us what this re-election means.
Well, it means that a new political system will come into force here in Turkey. So that means that Mr. Erdogan can, for example, appoint and fire ministers, he can dissolve parliament, he can call for new elections, he has a major sway over choosing senior judges. So he is basically now the most powerful man, that's what some people say, in modern Turkish history.
Now, Julie, as we know, the leader of opposition has accepted the defeat, but warned of what is calling a one-man rule. Do you think this is a danger going into the future of Turkey?
Well, the thing is, Mr. Erdogan now got what he wanted, what he worked for. He has now more presidential powers than ever. He can rule for at least another two terms, so possibly until 2020. 2028. But the major problems of Turkey, they do remain. You know, Turkey is now facing an economic crisis, double-digit inflation, and many things got so expensive here for people. They don't have jobs, unemployment is high, youth unemployment is over 20%. And then there are the wars in neighboring countries. Turkey has a military intervention in Syria, in Iraq as well. So all of these problems, they will remain, and Mr. Erdogan has to find a solution for these problems.
DW's correspondent in Ankara, Julia Han. And now we head over to Nigeria, where the police have today sent reinforcements to the central state of Plateau after violence between herders and farmers left 86 people dead over the weekend. The special intervention force is expected to boost security and restore peace in the affected areas, which have a long history of violence as farmers and herders fight for resources.
The incident is also said to be in retaliation of an attack by ethnic Berom farmers on Fulani herders on Thursday. Our reporter Sonia Piotia looks at the causes of this conflict that have been going for ages in the region.
The Plateau State, together with the Benue State, is part of so-called Middle Belt that separates the predominantly Muslim North from the largely Christian South. This area has long been a hotbed of ethnic, sectarian and religious tensions between indigenous farming communities, who are mainly Christians, and the nomadic Fulani cattle herders, who are predominantly Muslim. Heinrich Bergstrasser explained the different dimensions of the conflict.
There's a religious issue, and then there's a political issue about positions on the local level, who is getting a bit of the share of the federal money that is distributed between the federal level and the state level and the local level.
Unfortunately, the Nigerian government has not done anything to solve the issues which have caused the escalation of the problem. Therefore, people from both sides have formed their own militia to safeguard their life and property. Dr. Aminu Gamawa explained that the solution does not only lie with the federal and state government.
The community also has a role to play, the traditional rulers and religious leaders, because most of this violence and most of this conflict actually is being incited and is being sponsored by some of the people in the community for their own political interests or for their own power politics.
This conflict based on resources between the farmers and the herders has been ignored for years, and it is time for the Nigerian government to go beyond the usual solutions, which are sending police and military troops, but to actually conduct proper investigation, arrest the perpetrators and bring them to justice, as well as apply policies that they will once and for all suit both parties, said Aminu Gamawa.
Sonia Piotie with that report. And we have lots of comments on this story coming on our Facebook page. I'll begin with one from Tony Okay, who says, these are not clashes. Villagers were murdered in their sleep by the same herdsmen who have killed up to 2,000 this year alone.
And Onyia Emmanuel says the federal government of Nigeria will do nothing because the terrorists are from the ethnic group that does not like, and nothing will happen.
And Paul O. Aze says, it's barbaric. Children are being killed and no international media talks about it. Are cows valuable than human beings? Only in Nigeria. I don't agree with Paul because we are talking about it and we've been reporting about this conflict for a long time as well.
Yeah, for sure. There's more also on our page, DW. And of course, there's someone listening to us on Facebook, Tochuko Onukwa, who says, we're reported, boys. I'm a girl. Crush genocide against Christian farmers by Fulani Muslim herdsmen.
And Emeka Obi sort of agrees with that comment. He says, DW Africa, for your information, this is genocide by Fulani herdsmen and not farmers, herders, clashes. Stop believing lies. The government in power has not arrested any herdsmen, but protects them and allow them to kill indigenous farmers and Christians.
Tameng Desmond actually says Buhari is a mess to Nigeria and he calls him the African giant. He said he should resign with immediate effect.
So many comments, but at the same time, Zipporah, I think it's important that this region, I mean, that the government and all the stakeholders sit down and find a solution once and for all. I mean, it's been going on for ages, as we've heard in that report by Sonia. And I think it's important that people sit down and stop, you know, these reprisal attacks and killing each other.
We sure hope so, because that's what President Buhari has promised to do, to end that conflict.
Thank you so much for those comments. Keep them coming on our DW Africa Facebook page. We'll read them when we can. You're still listening to DW's Africa Link program live from our studios in Bonn. I'm Crispin Mwakideo.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura. You can also hear this program online by visiting our DW Africa Facebook page. Still to come, we know about blood banks, but have you heard about breast milk bank? This Ugandan doctor explained why they came up with one.
I found myself donating because, one, I am a breastfeeding mother, two, I have more breast milk than my baby need, and three, there was a mother who was in need.
And as the World Cup in Russia enters the last phase of group stage, Samson O'Malley in Russia will bring us up to date with the two teams still carrying the African flag high, that's Nigeria and Senegal.
For sure, we are looking forward to that. But before we talk about football, let's talk politics. South Sudan President Salva Kiir is in neighboring Sudan to meet again with rival Riek Machar amid fragile efforts to end the country's five-year civil war. This comes after President Kiir rejected the idea of having Machar rejoin his government when they met last week in Addis Ababa.
Tens of thousands have been killed in South Sudan's conflict, and it has created Africa's largest refugee crisis since the 1994 Rwandan genocide. Ahmed Soliman is research associate at the Africa program Chatham House in London, and I asked him what makes President Omar al-Bashir of Sudan so confident of achieving what the regional body IGAD has so far failed to achieve.
I'm not certain. It seems as though they're going to have more time, or they're going to certainly put more pressure on the two leaders, in particular to discuss and agree on outstanding issues. But I'm hoping that they think that, you know, high-level engagement, high-level mediation between the two presidents, and including President Bashir and President Museveni, both who are very influential stakeholders regionally on South Sudan, will have an effect and will be able to bridge the differences between those two groups in South Sudan.
And how would you describe the relationship between President al-Bashir and the two South Sudanese leaders? That's President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar.
Sudan's relationship with South Sudan is extremely important. As you know, the two, not many years ago, were one country. And Sudan has been very engaged on South Sudan. In the past, has been a staging venue for supporting opposition actors and supporting armed movements as well. This is something that Sudan has taken a step back from in recent times and trying to play a more constructive role. But it also speaks to the initiative by the Sudanese government, some of the internal issues within Sudan. And as we know, Sudan is very keen to revive operations in the Unity oil fields and get the oil moving through Sudan again, where currently those installations are being protected by joint border force from Sudan and South Sudan.
You mentioned there the issue of oil between the two countries, Sudan and South Sudan. Until now, South Sudan still relies on Sudan's oil infrastructure to transport its crude oil. Do you think that is a card that al-Bashir would want to play in these talks?
Yes, as I was saying, the South Sudanese government is very reliant on Sudan for the oil infrastructure and to continue exporting oil, which constitutes 98% of national revenues. So it depends on maintaining good relations with the North. And as I said, there are interests vice versa from the Sudanese, in particular at this time with Sudan's economy. In effect, Sudan's economy has suffered from the losses of 70% of oil revenues since the South seceded. So this is an ongoing dialogue between the two countries. And I think oil is a significant factor here. I mean, it's not the only one as well. There is a regional mediation process that we're seeing. There is a kind of a staging process for regional involvement. IGAD is the regional bloc, and the mediation being held and led in Addis Ababa by the region. So the region has a very vested interest. And then, as we pointed out, very personally, at the heads of state level and on the economic front as well as the political front, there are vested interests in South Sudan by its neighboring countries. So I think you have to take the regional dynamics into account when trying to solve South Sudan's crisis. And of course, that's no guarantee of peace, as we've seen in the past, because peace deals can be signed, but it doesn't mean that they're necessarily going to last or they're going to be implemented in the nature in which they were signed.
Ahmed Soliman, associate researcher at the Africa Programme Chatham House in London.
Now, we did ask on our Facebook page, after previous failed peace talks, can Sudan president finally help restore peace?
Chinyere Ezefe says Riek Machar is full of double standards, lack of sincerity of purpose and not ready for peace, a stumbling block to a peaceful South Sudan. He should be arrested and charged for war crimes.
But there's someone who is positive. Master Rahuman says he worked with those warriors. Probably, I expect so. He can restore peace. Yes.
And Romeo Ajay says they fought for independence so they can kill themselves and loot their country. US and UN should impose sanctions on them. Strict ones.
Yeah, but we don't know if sanctions will surely work.
Well, they already sanctioned some sort of sanctions on South Sudan, but so far they have failed to achieve any meaningful results in terms of achieving peace in the country.
Yeah, so tell us what you think on our Facebook page, DW Africa.
Health check.
Now, we talk about health matters. As we all know, the importance of giving breast milk to newborn babies. The World Health Organization, WHO, recommends breastfeeding within the first hour of life, at least up to the second year. However, in circumstances where babies whose mothers have died and others have been thrown away, death occurs in a short time.
And it is against that background that a hospital in Uganda's capital, Kampala, has established Breastfeeding Bank to receive breast milk from mothers willing to donate to save babies. Despite cultural beliefs that a baby cannot feed on another mother, a number of women are willing to donate. Frank Iga from Kampala sent this report.
At Insambia Hospital in Kampala capital, 10 premature babies are in incubators struggling for life in the neonatal intensive care unit. The nurses here constantly monitor their health to ensure that they survive. Dr. Victoria tells me they receive about 200 babies of this kind every month who urgently need breast milk to live.
To be able to get breast milk, we screen the mothers for diseases like HIV, hepatitis B, and CMV. After we have screened the mothers and they have donated the breast milk, we later on pasteurize it to see that it doesn't have any bacteria. So if this baby does not get breast milk, chances of getting an infection are very, very high.
Damali, a mother of a nine-month-old baby and a journalist working with the local TV station, tells me she was prompted to compile the story about mothers donating breast milk to babies because she found it weird and disgusting. Little did she know that she would also donate.
In the middle of my story, I found myself donating because, one, I am a breastfeeding mother. Two, I have more breast milk than my baby needs. And three, there was a mother who was in need at that time. And it does not make sense for you to preach what you cannot practice, surely. It would be very unfair for me to come back to my office with a very beautiful story when I did not save a life, yet I could have. So I ended up donating that very time. And now I am donating every day. Eventually, kind of fall in love with that baby that you want to keep helping out.
Morina Tukunda has come to the hospital to donate breast milk. However, she is still waiting for her test results for confirmation if she qualifies.
In case every result comes out negative, I'm ready. I want to give out. Why should this baby suffer looking for the milk and it's not there when some of the mothers we have in surplus?
Musician Viola Karuri says she would give milk and go as far as breastfeeding a baby of another mother to save a life.
Absolutely. I would definitely not just save a life, I would feed a child who needs feeding if I had the milk to do that. So I think having it is a privilege, and why not share it?
However, not all mothers are willing to donate breast milk to babies in need to survive. Fiona Namiro, a mother of two, tells me she would only donate milk to a blood relative.
If people sometimes even fail to donate blood, what about breast milk? Because I believe breast milk is the first thing that shows attachment between a mother and a baby. I don't know you, no breast milk for you.
Dr. Victoria says there's no other milk that is ideal for a baby than breast milk.
When a cow gives birth, there is cow's milk. When a goat gives birth, the goat feeds on goat's milk. And when a human being gives birth, it should ideally feed on human breast milk. And there are many components in breast milk that help to protect the baby. There are enzymes in the breast milk that are going to break down any bacteria, especially for premature babies. You save them by giving breast milk. When you give them any other milk, the babies fall sick and they cannot survive. And sometimes even the mother's milk is not enough. So that's why we need supplementation of breast milk, and we store it in a bank.
The survival rate of the newly born has shot up at Nsambya Hospital due to mothers who are voluntarily donating breast milk to feed babies. Dr. Victoria says this initiative is the first of its kind in Uganda, and they are looking forward to expanding it to save more babies.
Frank Yiga, they are reporting in Kampala. And it's a very interesting bank, the breast milk bank.
Yeah, that's a unique one, but why not? I think it will save lots of lives.
It will indeed. Now let's head to Russia, where teams are playing their last games in the group stage. At the moment, Tunisia is more or less out. Egypt, who have also been kicked out of the tournament after losing their first two games, lost today 2-1 against Saudi Arabia. Morocco are also, unfortunately, out, and they play Spain later tonight.
So, Crispin, that now means we are left with two teams in the tournament from Africa, Nigeria and Senegal, who are still in contention. But for more on the upcoming games, let's join Samson Omale in Russia.
The final group matches in the 2018 World Cup gets underway today across various venues in Russia. For Africa interest at the World Cup, attention will be focused on Nigeria's Super Eagles in Group D, as Argentina, Iceland and the Super Eagles will have the opportunity to qualify for the second round. With Croatia having already qualified from Group D, Nigeria and Argentina lock horns once again, this time at the St. Petersburg Stadium, with ambition of reaching the knockout stages of Russia 2018. Ahead of the Argentina clash, Nigeria striker Ahmed Musa, who scored a brace against Iceland, is confident as Super Eagles will soar high once again.
Yeah, for me, I think I'm very good in breaking the record. So for me, I feel very happy being the top scorer in the World Cup. It's not that easy, but I have to thank my teammates because they give me all the support, and my chief coach here, because if he don't believe in me, he can put me in the pitch. So I thank everybody for the support, and then think about the winning. We have to think about the last game and focus about the last game. That is more important for now.
Senegal, the only African team not to have tasted defeat so far, missed the chance to put themselves in a good position to qualify for the round of 16, as they were forced to a 2-2 draw by Japan in Group H of the Russia 2018 FIFA World Cup on Sunday. Both teams are now on 4 points and after two games, with Senegal facing Colombia in their final group game, while Japan will take on Poland on Thursday. I spoke to some journalists covering the World Cup here in Moscow, and this is what they had to say.
I think this result, 2-2 draw, makes the group very interesting because, as you know, Japan beat Colombia 2-1 in the first match. Senegal beat Poland by a similar scoreline in the first match, in their first match of the group. So it means both teams are level on 4 points, same goal aggregate. Number of goals scored and number of goals conceded is the same. So this result makes the group very exciting.
Well, I think it's not such a good result for Senegal, but I'm sure they are happy that they have avoided defeat in this game.
I mean, you don't take the lead twice and give the lead away. Then if you are not able to defend, you have no business at the World Cup. Unfortunately, Senegal get eliminated from the tournament, and they will look back to this game with a lot of disappointment, and they will have to know that their campaign ended in this particular game here. At this level, you've got to be able to understand how to defend, how to keep your lines, how to run down the clock.
That report there compiled by Samson Omale in Russia. Now, a story that is really making headlines here in Europe about the migration crisis. Libya says there will be no refugee camps on its soil as it rejected Italy's proposal. So what's the best way to tackle this migration crisis, and how can African governments prevent forced or illegal migration? We asked you that on our Facebook page.
Yeah, that's the big question. Crispin Kenatha actually thinks I stand with Libya on that decision. He says the best way to manage this is to prevent them. Western countries, especially France and Britain, are the main sponsors of dictatorship in Africa.
And Alt Basi says European countries are to share the burden they created. Simple. Libya was once a good place. Now nasty things are happening there. Libya of the past isn't Libya of now.
Now someone is accusing us. Sophia Heritage says DW Africa, don't pretend not to know the solution to this problem. The West is the major cause of this problem.
Wow, so the West there is being criticized and blamed for all the chaos happening in Libya. Patrick Ibe says Europeans will pay for the atrocities they committed against Biafrans and Africa in general. This is just the beginning because more are coming.
Yeah, and one last one here from Becker Law, who says Europe should close its borders and simply help Africa's political situation in good faith.
Thank you very much for those comments. I am Crispin Mwakideo.
And I'm Zipara Nyambura. Bye for now.